CBSI in the world. I'm John Batchelor. Report. Ebrahim Raisi, the president of Iran, phone call to Vladimir Putin, president of Russia, after the attack on Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, and Israel. Is this one war? It doesn't have an answer, but it's worth looking at over time. Moscow, Tehran, Pyongyang, and Beijing, in some fashion, are allied. Unknown where it's headed. However, I welcome Bradley Bowman, Senior Director of the Center on Military and Political Power at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. The events of these last hours look to be a turn of the page. 170 drones, 30 cruise missiles, and 120 ballistic missiles fired at Israel from either the territory of Iran or the territory of neighboring countries under with shooters who are under the control of Iran. Brad, a very good evening to you. The success rate of shoot down is impressive. And in an essay that you have published along with your colleagues, Ryan Brobst and Mike Dahm, you note that what we witnessed on those flashing lights over the Blue Mosque that I witnessed on Jerusalem Post front page during the attack, what we're witnessing is something that has not been seen before. Coordinated defense using air, sea, land, and states, many states. How did it happen, Brad, that we saw that? That coordination, did we know we could act that effectively? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John, and thanks for the opportunity to join you again. I think what is absolutely clear, even though some of the details are still emerging, is that this was a unprecedented direct attack by the Islamic Republic of Iran against Israel, involving more than 350 missiles and drones that had the purpose of killing Israelis. That's for sure. Any listeners reading anything about this was a performative attack have never been on the receiving end of a ballistic missile. One. Point two is it was, despite those intentions and on the part of the radical regime in Tehran, it failed, and it failed big time. And it failed for two or three reasons. One is that Israel has one of the most impressive integrated and layered air missile defense systems in the world. Two, it had the most capable military in human history on its side, aka the United States, and with whom it has an incredible mill-to-mill relationship, despite all the tos and fros of the political drama from time to time. And the British were also in the mix, and the French were also in the mix, and the Jordanians were in the mix, and kind of discreetly, in ways still unfolding, the Saudis and Emiratis may have been had some a modest role to play as well. So this is a glimpse, in my opinion. This is one of the main points we were trying to put into our piece we published yesterday. This is a glimpse of what a combined regional security architecture could look like that includes Americans, Arabs, and Israelis, that helps us more effectively detect, deter, and defeat aggression from the Islamic Republic of Iran. I don't expect Arab countries to join Israel in an attack on Iran anytime soon. I'm not saying that. I'm talking about defensive regional security architecture, which more effectively secures American, Israeli, and Arab interests in the region, which, by the way, are largely overlapping.
Lessons learned. I go to your essay. The nature and scale of Iran's attack demonstrate that Israel and America's ability to deter Iran from directly attacking Israel has eroded. Deterrence has failed? Is that what that says?
You know, deterrence, as you and I have talked about before, is in the mind of our adversary. It's not what you or I think or what Washington or Jerusalem thinks. It's what our adversaries think about two things: their ability to accomplish the military objective, to hit the target they want to hit, and their assessment of the cost-benefit analysis, the counterpunch they may receive. I would just flag and remind your listeners that on Friday, when asked about his message to Iran, President Joe Biden responded with a one-word warning to Tehran. He said, don't. Don't, he said. Well, you know, I don't think you don't have to go to an Ivy League school to get a graduate degree in international relations to understand that the Islamic Republic of Iran was clearly unimpressed with those warnings from Washington, because just a day or two after Biden's warning, Iran proceeded to launch an unprecedented, complex, and direct attack against Israel. So deterrence is severely tattered, and everyone calling on the Islamic Republic of Iran not to respond in my view, is very, very short-sighted. And I think it's a little bit arrogant, or a little, at least not lacking in strategic empathy. Can you imagine, to your listeners, your home being, having someone launch 350 missiles and drones at your home, and then someone who lives thousands of miles away telling you, you know, you should really just take that and not respond. You know, I mean, again, go back to the playground. A country or an individual in the sole business of receiving punches and not counterpunching is likely to receive more punches. And so Israel has a responsibility and a right to respond, just as they did after October 7th. But I think that response could come at a time in choosing when Israel decides. There's an argument for them taking their time here, in my opinion, and it can take many different forms.
Second lesson, the shadow war is no longer in the shadow. My observation from the outside is that changes everything. How do you observe the shadows lifting, and we're now in full sunlight of mano a mano?
At risk of oversimplification, I would say that you can view kind of Israelis' views on the world. You can really talk about a pre-October 7th worldview, or at least regional view, and a post-October 7th. In some ways, maybe to a different degree, you can also talk about pre and post world in terms of the attack this weekend. Why? Because, you know, Iran going after Israel is not new. It's just in the past they've used their proxies to do it, as we've talked about, to displace the consequences and counterpunches onto others, usually Arabs. But here we have a direct attack from Iran against the state of Israel. So a Rubicon has absolutely been crossed. I think we're going to continue to see the Islamic Republic of Iran using its proxies to attack Israel. We've seen that since the attack this weekend. But we're also going to see Israeli covert attacks against Iran. But depending how Israel and the United States respond, I think this attack last weekend means we should expect more attacks directly from Iran whenever they're not happy. And I think Israel is going to feel even more licensed than they already did to conduct attacks, covert and overt, directly into the Islamic Republic of Iran. That is a new, or at least different, Middle East.
There is talk that half the missiles failed to launch, or half the drones failed to launch. No confirmation, total fog of war. That means even more was planned incoming. There is also talk that there are supplies provided by Russia, supplies provided by North Korea. I don't have it on China, but none of that is confirmable. But what you're pointing to is a future that is going to require much more coordination than the spontaneity of the weekend. Is it in train? Jordan, Saudi Arabia, France, Britain, America, Cyprus, Turkey, is it in train, to your knowledge, Brad?
You know, John, the more I do this, the more I think nothing's in train, if by in train we mean it's inevitable. It's not inevitable. The fact that the Saudis and Emiratis and the Jordanians are so sheepish in terms of being publicly associated with this tells you a lot about the politics in the region and some of the challenges that we confront in building this kind of regional security architecture I talked about. But when push came to shove, the Jordanians permitted the Israelis to do what they needed to do. And the Saudis and Emiratis may have been helpful to some modest degree as well. That's positive. But, you know, this dynamic is the same dynamic we've observed in the Red Sea, for example, where you see Saudi Arabia and Egypt having fundamental economic and national security interests and freedom of navigation in the Red Sea, yet they're reluctant to be publicly associated with an American-led effort to prevent attacks on commercial shipping in the Red Sea. So we've got some challenges in front of us, but our best advocate for this regional security architecture I'm talking about is the Islamic Republic of Iran. Not its words, but its actions. Its actions, including this unprecedented attack this weekend, is the most persuasive case possible that the real threat to regional security is not Israel, it's the Islamic Republic of Iran. Israel wants to pick off Israel by itself, wants to isolate and demonize Israel, and wants to use its terror proxies to achieve that outcome. But anyone who truly is interested in regional security should understand that the real path forward is a multilateral regional security architecture that identifies the number one enemy and makes clear that if they pick a fight with one state in the region, they've picked a fight with many of them.
We have a minute, Brad. Hezbollah has 150,000 missiles, some of them as good as what were fired on over the weekend. That must be dealt with. Do you anticipate a retaliation against Iran without a retaliation against Hezbollah? What does this look like?
I think Israeli military planners, and for that matter, American military planners, have to assume any major strike against Iran could simultaneously bring a major attack from Hezbollah. After all, that's the primary purpose of Hezbollah from Iran's perspective, to serve as a deterrent against an Israeli attack on Iran's nuclear program, or maybe even a large strategic attack against Iran, its energy sites, its defense industrial base, other things. So I think that's one of the reasons why it might be in Israel's interest to take its time, pocket the diplomatic and economic concessions now that it's starting to get from Washington, see if you can push Hezbollah north of the Litani River via diplomacy. I'm not holding my breath, but give it a go, and then respond to the Islamic Republic of Iran at a time and in a manner of your of Israel's choosing.
Bradley Bowman, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.